war fatigue in America. It's affecting our psychology. I've said this before. I understand that. It's an ugly war.
That's President Bush speaking earlier today at a press conference. Of course, the big subject in the press conference was the war. The White House did issue a report on the status of the war. And, of course, that's been the subject of conversation all over the place. Many people believe that this war should have ended almost as quickly as it began. Many believe that the war in Iraq never should have begun. I remember because I was listening to the audio today. I remember back in 2003, in the months leading up to the war, it was very clear that we were going to go to Iraq. I think it had even been announced that we were going to make some sort of move toward Iraq. I remember talking with you as our listeners and asking you in advance, saying, look, by the time we go to war, it'll be too late to really express an opinion in advance. What do you think about a preemptive war? That's what we were calling it back then. I said it again and again. And a war to prevent a greater war, a war to prevent terrorism, to root out a nasty dictator and his weapons of mass destruction. I remember at the time, people were of all different opinions. We asked questions like, is this a just war? Is this war justified? And you chimed in. I'm wondering, have your thoughts and your opinions about the war in Iraq changed? It's open lines, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live this Thursday, July the 12th. President says, we're going to have to wait to see what happens. And he's been saying that for about 3 or 4 years. Have you waited long enough? Do you want the war to end? Well, that's probably not a good way to put it. Do you think the war needs to be over with as soon as possible? And have your thoughts and your ideas changed about the war? Were you in favor of it and considered it a just war in 2003, but you're not so sure anymore? If you thought it was an unjust war, do you think it is just now? If you thought it was a just war, do you think it's not just now? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Issuesetc@kfuo.org. I remember doing a number of interviews with various people back in 2003 when war was the subject. We had been in Afghanistan, and now we were talking about expanding the war into Iraq. And we talked with several guests about just war as a theory, and whether or not or how that theory might apply to the war in Iraq, a preemptive war. I remember talking with you about it. How have your thoughts changed, if they have at all? If you were in favor of the war, are you more in favor of it now, less in favor of it? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Well, the president had a press conference this morning, and he didn't spend much time talking about any other subjects except the war. Let's hear again from President Bush during that press conference this morning on the war.
Those who believe that the battle in Iraq is lost will likely point to the unsatisfactory performance on some of the political benchmarks. Those of us who believe the battle in Iraq can and must be won see the satisfactory performance on several of the security benchmarks as a cause for optimism.
So the president was trying to sound optimistic on the war. Are you optimistic about the war? Were you before, and has your optimism flagged? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issue ZTC. At KFUO.org, of course, the president has his critics, whether we're at war or not. But one of his major critics is Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, especially on that issue of the war. While the president was defending the continued pursuit of the war in Iraq, Senate Majority Harry Reid was disagreeing with the president.
The report from the president confirms what many had suspected. The war in Iraq is headed in a dangerous direction. And the wrong direction, of course.
Do you share that opinion? A lot of people do. If you look at the president's poll numbers, they're low. Sometimes they dip, sometimes they rise a little bit, but they're low pretty much all week long for months at a time. And if you examine those poll numbers, it's usually on the issue of the war in Iraq. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Senator Reid also says that President Bush has been spinning the information on the war in Iraq.
We're told good progress is being made. Wait till September. Good progress is being made. How many times over the last 4.5 years have we heard this? Too many to number.
Now, Christians can, in goodwill, disagree on this issue of the war. And what I'm asking from you is, how have your thoughts and opinions about the war changed over the last 4.5 years? If they have. Maybe they haven't. Maybe you were for it, and you're still for it, and your mind hasn't changed one bit. DB is calling from his car. Hi, DB.
Hey, Todd. You know, the doctrine of just war is true. It's just very difficult in its application. And I find myself at tension. I basically agree with the reasons behind us entering into a war with Iraq in the first place. My concerns, though, with it came early on when we were trying to establish a democratic government in Iraq based on, or at least heavily influenced by, Islamic doctrine. And as long as that doctrine is in place, I just don't feel there can ever be a just government that truly can represent the rights of individuals and protect their freedoms, because that's just not part of Islamic doctrine and law.
DB, why did you believe, or why do you still believe, that the war in Iraq is justified?
My biggest concern, I think there were mixed reasons for our government to go in, and some of those reasons I probably would have problems with morally. But originally, my biggest concern was the way in which Saddam Hussein treated those people. I mean, there was torture and abuse, and it's very clear, and the world was ignoring it. And so that had to end, and I think that when a government has the power to stop another government from clearly committing moral and abuses against its citizens, it should do so. And that's probably an opinion that not all Christians would agree with me on, but I just can't stand to see people tortured when we can help prevent that.
DB, thank you very much. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. You can also email your thoughts on the war. Have they changed? Have they remained the same? Issues ETC at KFUO.org. So DB's concerns come more from trying to establish a democracy in an Islamic nation, and he thought Saddam Hussein's treatment of his people was enough justification for going to a war in Iraq. Jim is calling from Madison, Wisconsin. Jim, thanks for waiting.
Oh, thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
I don't know that my opinions have changed about the war. You know, many years ago I took an oath to uphold the Constitution of the United States and back them in whatever they do when I was in the military. And I think the reason that they went in there, you know, there was a couple of good reasons to go in there, and I stand behind that to this day. But I don't know that we are going to take and achieve a political solution with a government and a religion that's as radical as Islam, because the government is the religion.
So you're in agreement with DB, who called before, that the real problem here is, what do you do after the war, or what do you do with Iraq, even if the war is to come to an end?
Yeah, my whole contention is that you cannot fight a political war against someone who is fighting a religious war against you.
Interesting way of putting it.
You have to take and fight them on their own religious beliefs. It's the old thing of, I think, many, many years ago, they taught this in the West Point history of the Army, that somewhere in some country, some general was having trouble with Muslim rebels. He caught a bunch of them, lined them up, left one of them with the blindfold off. He killed a pig, dipped all the bullets of the firing squad in the pig blood, shot them all, let the one guy go. Insurgency stopped.
Hmm.
It was against their religion. They couldn't go to Allah because they had been tainted with the blood of a pig.
It's pretty draconian, too.
Yes, it is. But that's their belief, not ours.
Thank you very much, Jim. All right. Now, the war itself. Are you finding it hard? Okay, this is me. You want to tell me? I'll tell you about me. When we first went to war, of course, everyone's ambivalent about going to war. I wasn't standing out on my front porch crying for war. But I think I pretty much bought into most of the reasons why we ought to go to war in Iraq. I, like most people at the time, believed that there were probably weapons of mass destruction there that we needed to get our hands on to secure. I, like almost everyone that I've ever heard talk on the subject, believed that Saddam Hussein was a bad man up to no good, and that leaving him in place one day longer was just going to mean more needless death in Iraq. I also believed that we'd kind of made that mess ourselves, and maybe we needed to clean it up. We'd certainly sold him some weapons of mass destruction. And I had other thoughts on it, too. But you know what? The longer the war has gone on, I find it harder and harder to defend the war with people. We were trying to do it just yesterday. It's harder and harder to defend the war in Iraq with people who say it was a bad idea from the very beginning. So what about you? Where do you stand on the war today? Is it the same place you stood 4.5 years ago? 505-7850. Email us, issuesetc@kfuo.org, or 1-800-730-2727. We're coming to you live this Thursday, July the 12th. Before the war in Iraq, we had several guests on. On both sides of the issue, when it came to just war and the war in Iraq, is the question, is it or is it not a just war? Now, we're going to hear two examples here. The first comes from Michael Novak of the American Enterprise Institute in an interview that we did here on Issues, Etc. in February of 2003. Now, remember, we went into Iraq, and it was being called a preemptive war. We went into Iraq in March of 2003. So we're talking about barely a month before we entered Iraq. This is what Michael Novak of the American Enterprise Institute had to say on the issue of our entrance into Iraq and just war. What do you contend about the just or unjust nature of the proposed war with Iraq?
The reason we are going to go to war, unless Saddam Hussein argues, is that we are already in a war. And the war has not been concluded in the terms set by the United Nations in 1991, by the United Nations Security Council, first by the peace negotiations, then by the Security Council in Resolution 687, that Saddam Hussein committed two acts of aggression in 1991. One was the invasion of Iraq, but the other was the stockpiling of offensive weapons that only have an offensive purpose, chemical, biological warfare, and nuclear weapons. And they said, as a condition of his remaining president, he must disarm, and he must prove that he disarmed. And Saddam Hussein has never done that. In fact, seven times he said he has made a complete revelation, and the verifiers said, that's a lie, you haven't. If one of the wars in which we are now involved is the unfinished condition of the first war of 1991 with Iraq, namely they have not disarmed.
Okay, so Michael Novak's case was essentially that we've been on hiatus from the war that began under the first President Bush against Saddam Hussein when he invaded Kuwait. After that, there were all sorts of conditions set upon Saddam Hussein as the leader of Iraq that he was supposed to fulfill. And those conditions were set by the international community, largely the UN, and he had failed to fulfill those conditions. So, hiatus over, time for that war to continue. Michael Novak says, this isn't a second war in Iraq, this is a continuation of the first one. I'll be honest with you folks, I found his arguments at the time compelling. On the other side of the just war, Iraq war issue, here's an excerpt from an interview that we did with Dr. John Johnson of Concordia University, Chicago, in January of 2003, before the war. As you see it today, what is being called the preemptive war against Iraq that America and others are proposing, would this qualify as a just or an unjust war?
Certainly, as we are talking about a possible preemptive strike on Iraq today, that does not, in my estimation, fulfill the classical criteria of just war theory. So if we're talking about the classical Christian reflection on just war, never really have Christians in the past seen a first strike rather than defensive war as qualifying as a just war. So the, you know, the simple answer to your question is that it would seem that what we're talking about now in terms of a strike against Iraq does not fit the classical definition of a just war.
All right, that's Dr. John Johnson of Concordia University Chicago back in January of 2003, several months before the war in Iraq formally started. So who do you agree with? Michael Novak, who says what we were doing in 2003 was essentially finishing what was begun 10 years earlier in the first war in Iraq, and we had simply taken a hiatus, giving Saddam Hussein an opportunity to abide by international requirements, and he hadn't, so it was time to pick it up again. Or do you agree with Dr. John Johnson, who says that, look, it's one way, no matter how you cut it, it's preemptive, it's a first strike, and the classical theory of just war never allows for a preemptive war? 1-800-730-2727, 505-7850, or issue ZTC at KFUO.org. I think if you would have polled me in 2003, I would have said, all right, it looks from this side of the event as a just war. It's got all the hallmarks of a just war. And I don't know what I think about whether or not it's just at this point, but I'm having a harder time defending the war in Iraq to people who don't think it's a good idea. Have your thoughts and your opinions on the war changed? If so, how? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727 or issue ZTC at KFUO.org. And I want to hear from people on both sides of this issue. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issues ETC at KFUO.org. It's audio open lines. We're getting your opinions on the war in Iraq, especially your opinions as they have changed or remained the same. In the last half hour of the program, we're going to play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. You remember this. It's really easy to do. We play four soundbites from this week's Issues Etc. audio, and then we ask you to pick the one you think should be the Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week and tell us why. Chuck is calling from his car. Hi, Chuck.
Hi, Todd. How are you?
I'm pretty good.
Well, good. I, in 2003, was very much an active supporter of the Enduring Freedom Operation, and still support the troops today. But what we did is, after we got in there, is that we violated our own military doctrine, which is not to get mired down in a situation where you are an occupier. And that essentially is what we are, and we didn't have enough troops to do that. And it appears that that we went in without an adequate or even having an exit strategy.
So your support for the war initially has been tempered by what you think has been, what, a shift in the mission of the war?
Yes. And it was a shift by the seat of your pants, I think, is the way it worked out. When it took longer to determine whether or not there were weapons of mass destruction. And then somebody came up with an idea of nation building and making Iraq a democratic nation. And the gentleman that spoke earlier about trying to take a radical Islamic nation and having a democracy exist there, I think was very true.
Okay, so can you make a distinction for me, Chuck, between
yeah.
the fact that almost virtually every war we've ever fought, with the exception of Vietnam, after the war was over, so to speak, we left occupying forces there. And in some of these countries, we still have occupying forces there.
I was part of that in Germany, yeah.
And we helped, as you well know, then we helped to nation build in Germany to a great extent with all of the other allies that we had during World War II. How is Iraq different?
Well, Iraq is different, I think, number one, because in Germany and also in Japan, in World War II, the population and the society was simply devastated. There was hardly one brick on top of another one in the major cities of Germany, and the same is true in Japan. So you had that shock, if you will, of having been creamed and then having the occupying military there. Secondly, Germany and Japan were not armed camps. I mean, it seems like everybody and their cousin in Iraq's got an AK-47 or two or more, and maybe an RPG sitting in the closet in the off the living room.
So, in other words, in Germany and Japan, we basically had destroyed their ability to continue any kind of hostilities, and it was time to rebuild. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Chuck, thank you very much for the call. What about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Matt is calling from Seward, Nebraska. Hi, Matt.
Well, I remember the lead up. I was actually living in St. Louis then. I was cautiously optimistic about going into Iraq. That was all. A lot of it was actually based on the weapons of mass destruction. I remember that was all related to giving terrorists weapons of mass destruction within the context of the post 9/11 world.
Mm-hmm.
Once that was out, we found. Well, if I'd have known the gross incompetence of the way the war was going to be managed, I don't see how anybody could argue with that at this point. And the fact that we were snookered by Shia Iraqi dissidents in the United States who convinced us that most Iraqis would welcome us and help us rebuild a pleasant Iraq that would be our ally.
Okay, you raised a very important issue there, but before I let you go, can you give us an example of when you say gross incompetence of how the war has been managed? Can you give us an example there, Matt?
An example?
Yeah.
From the very beginning, we still have no stability in this country. I mean, I guess I can't point to... I don't think we had enough troops, like you said. We didn't think we were going to have to occupy the country. I know we still have troops in Germany and all that, and I've made arguments about that to other people, too. But the fact is, within 3 or 4 years of after the German surrender, it was a pretty pacified, stable country in the sense that we didn't have people still carrying out sabotage and attacks against us. Right now, we can't control the country. I mean, we can control one part if we put a bunch of American troops into it, quell it down, and they just go, they're like ants moving to another place.
Real quick question, Matt, and with only about 20 seconds to respond, after your reflection on it, is the war in Iraq a just war?
Philosophically, I would say it was just based on, you'd have to go back into the history, going back to Saddam Hussein's invasion of his neighbor. We were their allies. The world supported that action. Really, it was a police action. Just, I have no problem with personally.
Well executed.
The right tactical and the good execution is the problem I have with.
Matt, thank you very much, and thanks for listening to Nebraska. We're taking your phone calls and your email on the war in Iraq. Have your thoughts 4.5 years ago changed today on the war, or have they remained the same? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Call during this break. A great time to call or email us, issues, etc. at KFUO.org. We're coming to you live this Thursday, the 12th of July, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. And that in-studio email address for your questions and your comments as we talk about your thoughts and opinions on the war in Iraq, issues, etc. at KFUO.org. More open lines after this.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Why do future pastors need to know the original biblical languages of Greek and Hebrew? Here's Issues, Etc. regular guest, Dr. Jeff Gibbs.
It's a lot of trouble. Why bother going through all that difficult learning? And the answer is easy and twofold. First, because the pastor as an under-shepherd feeds God's people with the nourishing food of His Word. And when you know Greek and Hebrew and study the Scriptures in depth, you can offer God's people the nourishment that they need. Second, the under-shepherd has to spot poisonous food. And by knowing the Scriptures that well through the study of the original languages, you can spot false teaching and harmful teaching and protect God's people from such teaching. These are the reasons why we study exegetical theology.
For more information on Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne or Concordia Seminary in St. Louis, look for their logos at our homepage, issuesetc.org.
This is Family News in Focus. I'm Bob Dittmer. The hate crimes bill is unnecessary, unconstitutional, and ungodly. That's the message several family groups relayed to lawmakers on the Hill yesterday. Josh Montez reports the groups are concerned that if the hate crimes legislation passes, the Christian message will be criminalized.
The hate crimes bill is still pending in Congress. In the meantime, lawmakers are being bombarded with opposition to the measure that gives special rights to homosexuals. Michael Markavich with Repent America calls the bill unnecessary.
We already have laws to protect those who act violently toward other people, and they should be prosecuted to the fullest extent of the law.
A good example is Wyoming. The state doesn't have a hate crimes law in the books, but was able to put hate crime offenders away for life in the murder case of Matthew Shepard. Markavich says a hate crimes law goes against the U.S. Constitution, which guarantees equal protection for all Americans.
The bill is unconstitutional because it will give special protections to certain groups of people, which is a clear violation of the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution.
Rusty Thomas with Elijah Ministries says the bill should be renamed the Criminalization of Christianity Act.
This legislation, if it passes, I believe, would have a serious impact upon the freedom of speech and freedom of religion for Bible-believing Christians.
The hate crimes bill has already passed through the House, but it's anybody's guess when the Senate will take up its version. For Family News in Focus, I'm Josh Montez.
At the news conference, Jesse Lee Peterson of the Brotherhood of a New Destiny said American values are under attack by Al-Qaeda and radical Islamists. Instead of combating that issue, it seems some within our government are more interested in criminalizing American citizens. For Family News in Focus, I'm Bob Dittmer.
The 63rd Regular Convention of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod gets underway this weekend. AM 850 KFUO will be broadcasting the convention's opening worship service live from the George R. Brown Convention Center in Houston on Saturday afternoon at 4 o'clock. So be listening Saturday afternoon for live coverage of the convention's opening worship service at 4 o'clock on AM 850 KFUO, inspirational Christian radio for the world. The story of God's creation of the world, the fall of man, and God's promise of salvation come alive in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July. It's a children's book titled The Real Story of Creation by Dr. Paul Meyer. The Real Story of Creation is published by Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. You'll also find information on our website, issuesetc.org. The Real Story of Creation, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for July.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Hearing from you on the war in Iraq, you know, the president had his say this morning, and he says, be patient. We have a preliminary report, and we're waiting to hear from our generals. Well, I want to hear from you. Have your thoughts on the war changed or remained the same in the last 4.5 years? If so, why was this a just war? Our callers seem to be saying, well, for the most part, they were saying, it was a just war that's been mismanaged. But how? How has it been mismanaged? I'm talking about specific examples. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc at kfuo.org. Waiting on the line in Kansas, here's Don. Hi, Don.
Yeah, Todd. The problem with the Western leaders is they have the secular mindset, and they do not understand radical Islam. And you could be more effective by spraying hog blood on them than if you used a bomb, because hog blood would just devastate them, because they have to go through a cleansing ritual if they get some on them.
Well, and you're the second person to not suggest that, but to talk along those lines. But I think you're so have your thoughts changed, Don?
I was somewhat worried that we might get bogged down over there in a guerrilla-type warfare. But, you know, you never know. You know, the first casualty of war is always the truth.
Don, thank you very much. Thanks for listening, Kansas. Well, there's a specific, right? This is a specific. Don says, how was it mismanaged? The issue of Islam as a factor in war, not as someone's private religion, their personal thoughts, their feelings, but as a factor in war, was not taken into account. Now, I think we've been saying that here on Issues Etc. for about 4.5 years. And we had guests on the program, in particular, Dr. John Warwick Montgomery, in advance of the war, who were saying, you'd better take this religion thing into account if you're going to fight the Muslims, because they're taking it into account. Tom in San Angelo, Texas, emails us with this. My thoughts will probably not be considered very politically correct. I feel that if we fight a war, we should fight a war. We are fighting, a la Vietnam, with one hand tied behind us, says Tom. We should use both barrels of the gun and get the job done. This is how World War II was fought and won. We're attempting to, quote-unquote, nation build at the same time as fighting a war. Chuck's comments just a moment ago make sense to me, says Tom. First, we need to fight a war, and then, as in Japan and Germany, nation build following the conclusion of the war. Now, I hadn't thought about that before. Remember that, Jeff, because I want to come back to that. As a result of not doing this, we're going in circles at the present time. The comments yesterday by a former Muslim LCMS pastor were interesting. He's talking about Amir Khan was with us yesterday. Iraq may not be the best or only place the war should be fought. If we're going to fight a war, then fight it wherever in the world fighting is necessary and fight it with all our might. This will not be popular, but it will be effective. I feel that the current conflict is a just war and should be continued. I say this as a father of a son who's currently in the military. Tom, thank you very much. Thanks for listening in Texas. Okay, Tom made a point there that I think is probably worth considering. In World War II, there was an armistice. There was a surrender. There was a now victory has been won. And then there was nation building. We didn't try and rebuild Japan while we were bombing it. We didn't try to rebuild Germany while we were fighting in it. We fought, then we rebuilt. Now, that's a point I had not considered before. Smartest listeners in radio. He thinks it's a just war. Nonetheless, what about the rest of you? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, issuesetc@kfuo.org. We're getting your opinions on the war in Iraq during Audio Open Lines Issues, Etc. live this Thursday, July the 12th. So, what do the Iraqis think? Here's a story from CNN.
Should the Americans stay or go? The debate rages on in Washington and across America, and also here on the streets of Iraq, where the effects of a pullout would be most felt. In a block of apartments in central Baghdad, a mixed Sunni Shiite couple at war in Iraq's bloody sectarian conflict. Here, a family. Munjib al-Naib is Sunni, his wife Shiite. They agree U.S. troops should stay to fix the chaos, they say, the occupation has created.
If they leave today, you know, the militias now take control of the country. There is no, neither the American or the Iraqi soldiers or the police.
Their three sons can't walk freely in a Shiite neighborhood anymore. Their son had a typically Sunni name, so they changed it to Ahmed so that his ID card would not give him away. Elsewhere on the streets of Baghdad, though, there is no shortage of people who say American troops should leave and leave now. Well, because they did not provide us security, this passerby says. They came and destroyed the country, nothing less, nothing more. It was them who started sectarianism. This man says he's grateful the U.S. removed Saddam Hussein, but that everything they've done since has hurt his country. It is true, when they first came, they got rid of the Ba'athists. They got rid of them, but they didn't provide us with the security and stability in Iraq. They destroyed the Iraqi economy. Back at the apartment complex, one floor down, I visit a Shiite family. Munthar Nader used to be a cab driver, but he was shot on the road between Baghdad and Mosul, and his car was stolen. Despite the violence his family has suffered, he says the Americans should stay. If I don't see U.S. forces in front of me, I feel scared, he says. Honestly, I feel scared. Because the terrorists are afraid from U.S. forces, along with Iraqi forces, so I would prefer for them to stay. Munther's brother was killed last year, and he now takes care of his orphaned nephew and niece, including young Haidar, sitting quietly on his knees. For Munther's mother, whether the U.S. military stays or goes matters little today. My dearest son to me was killed, and he is my son. Now, I do not care about anything. His children have become orphans. Above the television, a picture of a dead son, and the hopeless realization no political benchmark or military strategy will ever bring him back. Hala Gharani, CNN, Baghdad.
All right, folks, the White House today released its latest report on the war in Iraq. It's got benchmarks that have been set by the Congress, and the Congress is saying, by and large, not good enough, and the president is saying, be patient, we're working on it. Has your patience run out when it comes to the war? You know, we hear from the president that the Iraqis want us to stay, and I think that it may be true that the average Iraqi wants the military to stay, but why do they want them to stay? They want them to stay because they fear their fellow Iraqis. Not because we're necessarily doing a great job of rebuilding the nation. Have your thoughts changed on the war, or have they remained the same in 4.5 years? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Issues ETC at KFUO.org. Paul in Grafton, Wisconsin emails us. He says, how the war is going is not relevant to me in terms of whether or not I support the war. What matters to me is whether the war was just and necessary for our national defense. As far as I'm concerned, an unprovoked war against an enemy who has never attacked us can only be immoral from start to finish, says Paul. I've been against the war in Iraq since it was declared for this reason. The military operation in Afghanistan at least had the justification of being provoked by a direct attack on our country. The shifting support of American fair-weather warmongers, that's a pretty strong term there, fair-weather warmongers, who are all for an immoral war until it goes sour, surprises and saddens me, Paul. Thank you very much. All right, there's Paul who said, never was for it, and here are my reasons. It was unprovoked, never will be for it. It's immoral from beginning to end. Care to react? 505-7850. 1-800-730-2727. Here's Paul calling from his car. Hi, Paul.
Hello.
Hi, Paul.
No, this is Bernard.
Oh, Bernard. Well, welcome.
Okay. I was going to say that my attitude hasn't changed. I was against it. And I think that we in the West, especially religion, since this is a religious program, we confuse Christ's admonition to go and baptize all nations in his name with go and spread freedom. That is not the Christian position. Number one, Saddam Hussein protected the Christian community in that area. Christians were safe in Iraq. Number two, it turns out that the inspectors found that he may have been playing games with them, but they didn't have weapons of mass destruction. So, I think that we cannot have a just war based on false premises.
Bernard,
and finally, I think that this war being treated like a crusade, as if we're Imperial England. When the Haitians occupied our country to help the British, look at our history. We Satanized the Haitian soldiers that were helping the British during our Civil War. So I think that we're on very, very bad footing, and I think that Christian organizations that come out for these wars, then they inhibit their mission to baptize all nations because it seems like the church is just an arm of the government.
Bernard, thank you very much. Good thoughts. In fact, on that whole issue of Christians that confuse the mission of the church with nation building or somehow a mandate to spread freedom worldwide. There's nothing wrong with freedom, but it's not the church's business to spread cultural freedom or societal freedom to the world. Couldn't agree more. Now, as to the false premise of the war, I do want to make one thing clear. Some people firmly believe that the president was just out and out lying when he led us to war. And others say, well, no, he was misinformed along with so many others. We'll never know what was in the president's heart there. But as to the question of whether or not we went under false pretenses, just the pretenses themselves were false, well, we kind of discovered that they were. But there was a bigger false pretense, I think, that we went in under than weapons of mass destruction. I'll get to that in a minute. Here's Tim calling from his car. Hi, Tim.
Hi. I've been against the war since the beginning, and I feel that there is an answer as to what the truth is about whether or not this is moral for us to be there. And if you look at the fact that 700,000 to a million civilians over there have died since we've been there, not to mention our own 3,500 soldiers and guys coming back with missing arms and legs, that our own government tries to keep this out of the news so they can put a different face on this war. Okay, and so that's false, and that's done with false. Obviously, there's a lie covering this. What the war is really about?
Well, Tim, I don't know. I don't think the government's doing a very good job of keeping that out of the news. To tell you the truth, at least the news that I watch, I don't think if the government's trying to keep that stuff out of the news, they're doing a terrible job. Especially if you watch the news that doesn't emanate from the United States, but even the stuff that we have here domestically. Here's Herman from Illinois. Hi, Herman.
Thank you for taking my call. There's an analogy in battling al-Qaeda. It has allies. One of them was Saddam Hussein, who was sort of a European Ba'athist socialist makeover. He's been taken out of the picture. In World War II, you had the three principal antagonists, Italy, Germany, Japan. About halfway through the war, Italy was taken out, but you still had Germany and Japan to deal with. And you have got the issue of al-Qaeda around the world, as well as now they are principally focused on their effort in Iraq. It's not a comfort to anyone who's lost someone or had them wounded in Iraq to say that we're losing more baby boomers on motorcycles in this country than we're having men killed every year in Iraq. There certainly is a price that is being paid. But I talked to a mother of a serviceman who's over there who said if we're not fighting them over there, they're going to be here. And al-Qaeda has other allies out there that they're trying to make. We've taken one out in a critical location of the world where they're having to put their resources and keep them off balance so that they can't go to closer to us.
All right, Herman, thank you very much. Well, this is a common argument that we hear, which is we're kind of staving off and helping and keeping the terrorist forces from regrouping because we're kind of keeping them busy in Iraq. So keeping busy there so that they don't come and get busy here. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. live this Thursday, the 12th of July. Now, the White House issued a report today. The president held a press conference today on the benchmarks for the war in Iraq. And we're taking your phone calls and email on this issue. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org. Has your opinion changed or stayed the same regarding the war in Iraq in the last 4.5 years? Is it a just war? Some of our callers are saying it's a just war that's being grossly mismanaged. Well, when does when does the mismanagement of a just war become something other than a just war? Now look at the death penalty. The death penalty, if justly administered, can be considered a godly thing, a just thing. But if not administered justly, then it's not a godly thing. Are we saying that this is a just war being unjustly administered or just incompetently administered? And if you're of that opinion, really, specifics do help. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727, or issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's true that Saddam Hussein, I wouldn't necessarily have called him an ally of al-Qaeda as much as a fellow traveler. They had the same goals, but whether or not they were directly in cahoots was a difficult case to make. Well, there was a report that was issued today about on the issue of al-Qaeda that Herman had mentioned. Here's the story from CNN.
The report says Al-Qaeda is using an area along the Afghan-Pakistan border to rebuild its forces and making them the strongest they've been since 9/11. Though calling it a severe threat, President Bush scoffed at the idea Al-Qaeda is as strong today as it was before the attack.
That's just simply not the case.
But Mr. Bush used the latest findings to again stress the U.S. must fight Al-Qaeda abroad if it wants to avoid dealing with the terrorists here. Democrats used the findings to bash the administration for the war in Iraq and for diverting attention from the terror problem in Afghanistan.
Al-Qaeda is our nemesis. Al-Qaeda has attacked us. And they're gaining strength while our troops are dying in Iraq.
Earlier this week, the head of Homeland Security said he had a gut feeling there'd be an increased threat of terrorism this summer right here on U.S. soil. The president was asked what's in his gut.
My gut tells me that, which my head tells me as well, is that when we find a credible threat, I'll share it with people.
For the president, the report outlining Al-Qaeda's buildup could help him defend his decision for a military buildup in Iraq. A buildup, he says, is necessary to keep the people back here in America safe. Drew Levinson, CBS News, New York.
Do you believe this? Do you believe that, it's been said so often, if we weren't fighting them there, we would be fighting them here? I've heard that a lot. Although it is an argument based upon someone's presumed ability to know what would happen if. The president said today that, contrary to what we heard in that piece there, the president said, well, Al-Qaeda isn't stronger than it would have been had we not gone into Iraq. And, of course, he refused to speculate several times in the course of his press conference about what he would do and what would happen if he heard this or heard that. But it is a fair amount of speculation to say that Al-Qaeda is weaker than it would have been had we not gone in. The only way to have known that, of course, would be to have not gone in and then to know how strong Al-Qaeda would be. But you see, you kind of choose which fork in the road you're going to take or which side of the fork you're going to take. And once you've gone that way, you can't say, well, if we wouldn't have done this, Al-Qaeda would have come to attack us. That was the whole argument for being preemptive, right? We strike them before they strike us. 505-7850-1800-730-2727 or issue ZTC at KFUO.org.
Put on your pastor clerical collar for a second, will you?
Mm-hmm.
All right. You know, I've never thought it was a just war, okay? But let's just, for the sake of argument, say it wasn't a just war, but now we're there. If it has an unjust premise, is it sinful to you're trying to ask?
You're choosing between the lesser of two evils. You always are.
Right.
Okay,
right.
Even with just war, because just war doesn't say that it's good or that it's a sinless. So you're asking the question, if it has an unjust premise, let's just say for the sake of argument that we could get everyone to agree that it's not a just war and we could somehow definitively prove in a court of law that it wasn't a just war. But we're there. Which does more harm, to stay or to leave? You're choosing between the lesser of two evils. Will people die in either case? Yes. Will Iraq be a mess in either case? Hard to tell. I can't imagine us pulling out and Iraq suddenly pulls itself together. So you're dealing with the lesser of two evils, which is why I'm not the president. And I wouldn't want to be the president.
So sin abounds. I mean, no matter...
There's no sinless way of doing this thing.
Right.
Had we not, and I think this is what some of the callers have said, had we not gone in, Saddam Hussein would have continued to be who he was and would have continued to harm his own people. And to act with impunity. Had we not gone in, we know at least that would have happened. He was not in a position of being readily toppled by anyone. And we tried once before with the previous Bush administration to say, rise up and take him out, and they didn't. They couldn't. So that's a bad choice. Here's another bad choice. Go to war and take a chance that we make it worse than it already was before. That's a bad choice. You see, this is kind of like our whole lives as Christians. We're constantly faced with choices in the real life where sin cannot be avoided either way. And if you're, as a Christian, you're thinking, I'm going to find the way to live that's sinless, you're fooling yourself. Because so often in life, it is a choice between the lesser of two evils. Or I guess I should say it a little more clearly. If you think there's a book out there that can teach you how do you conduct a sinless war, or how do you have a sinless marriage, or how do you raise children sinlessly, there isn't one. Because there are no sinless people.
Okay, but everyone wants to know if God is on our side.
In this war?
In this war. And so, you know, follow me here. This is the way the mindset goes. So if it had an unjust premise, God will not allow us to be victors.
That's not true.
Okay.
That's absolutely not true.
But, you know, that's exactly how the old, I would say the old Adam in us thinks.
Right. The old Adam wants to say, if we're doing this according to what God wants us to do, then he's going to somehow give us the victory. The only wars of which we can say that's true is the wars that God fought in the Old Testament. Now, when he fought and he said, look, I'm the one doing the fighting, then we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that victory was God's will. When it comes to wars where we have no clear promise from God that he's going to fight for us, I mean, it'd be one thing if George W. Bush were able to say, the battle is the Lord's, and then we watch our troops walk in there and defeat the enemy unequivocally without even firing a shot. Kind of the way the Israelites did in the Old Testament. Well, then they could say, the battle is the Lord's. We cannot blame God for victory, and we can't blame him for defeat in these cases, because we have no clear word from God on those things. And if you say, well, if God weren't on our side, then he wouldn't let us have victory. I don't know. I'm looking at this little dictator in Northern Korea who's pretty much had victory his entire life and his dad before him, and I'm pretty sure God's not on his side. Just war theory is not about determining whether or not we can get God to sign on to the war strategy. War theory is the best we can do in a fallen world, conducting war, which is inevitable, conducting war with one another, so as to do it most justly. But God never endorses any of our wars. And I don't think it's the business of our lawmakers to try and figure out whether God's on our side. God's on his side. God's on his own side. And while he permits us peace and war, and he conducts the affairs of men according to his providence, he does not let us in on his counsel. He keeps his own counsel as to what he's up to. We cannot say, without a clear word from God, we can't say what God is up to in all of this. But we do know, as Christians, according to that promise he makes to us, that he's working all things together for the good of those who love him and are called according to his purposes. But just war isn't, is this God's war? Can't be. More of your phone calls and your email on the war in Iraq after the break. Where do you stand? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727.
Where Christianity meets culture. You're listening to Issues, Etc.